Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them, and our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the 4th Estate Bunker on West Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Thank you, as always, for clicking play and enjoying some time with us. Your guest on this edition of the podcast is a four-term legislator from Cumberland County, Republican House Representative John Zocca. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We're going to spend some time today discussing energy, renewable, solar, cleaner, and your longstanding support of those industries, notably as a conservative. I want to first begin with a story that came out last week. WBTV, station out of Charlotte, reported that a clean energy organization, North Carolina Clean Energy Business Alliance, may have violated state campaign finance laws when it solicited its members to donate to your campaign. Mm-hmm. The fundraising request came at the same time that a controversial bill that Duke Energy supported, or supports, it's still an active bill, had effectively stalled or hit kind of a roadblock in the House. There has been no allegation that you have broken any law. Now, last week, you told WBTV that you had not asked the group to make this financial ask, and that if the State Board of Elections finds anything illegal about this, you will return the campaign contributions. That was last week.
Right.
As of today, we're recording this on a Tuesday, so that's just the context, right, the backdrop. Is there anything more that you can share with us at this point?
No, not really. I mean, I didn't ask them to do anything. We're still in session. They did that all on their own. That's an issue between the gentleman who did that and the Board of Elections. If the Board of Elections somehow feels that campaign contributions were not legal for some reason, I don't know what that would be, but I would absolutely return them.
Since last week, have you had any correspondence with the Board of Elections?
I have not. I don't even know if anybody's complained to the Board of Elections. I don't know. Nobody's contacted me since then.
If there were to be an investigation, and again, there's there's not that we're aware of. If there were, is that something that you, as a lawmaker, would automatically be notified of if your name is kind of tangentially attached to this? Do you know?
I don't know. I would hope they'd ask me since my name has been dragged into this. The last audit I had from the Board of Elections, there were no findings. Everything was perfect. I mean, I follow the law, which is what I told WTVB as well. And I can't control what other people do in emails or anything else. I can only control what I do.
John Zocca here on the podcast. You are a conservative legislator, and this story that I just mentioned born out of somewhat of a divisive debate over Duke Energy and the process through which rate regulations take place. It's a bill that – can jump in here at any point if I'm
– Okay. Well, it wasn't really tied. The fundraiser had nothing to do with the Duke Energy bill. Okay. I mean, I was a speaker out at this conference, and a lot of the folks from North Carolina saw it there. I already know and have been contributors to me previously. Mm-hmm. I decided to have a fundraiser out there, and I made those plans months ago because I knew I was going to be a speaker at this conference. So the Duke Energy bill, that's a separate thing. Now, when that was first filed, I believe it was back in April, I wasn't a fan of the bill then. As it's gone through its iterations to where it is now, I think it's gotten moderately better, but I'm still not a fan of the bill.
When the email is as the timeline as I remember it, or the timeline as I understand it, the request from this energy group,
right,
that came, it came very close to about the time that the bill had hit somewhat of a roadblock in the House, and you may or may not have helped in hitting that roadblock. Is that a fair characterization?
Well, that's fair, because like I say, I've been opposed to the bill. The last time it was voted on in the House was, I believe, August 22nd. When Representative Strickland put the Strickland Amendment on there, which took out Section 2, the conference I was at was September 25th, and I believe that email that this other person put out was the September 18th or something like that. So it was well after the vote. And since that time, the bill has been in the conference, and it's come back with the conference report. The Senate has voted in the affirmative on it. Now it's over in the House, and it's been on the calendar a few times, but it's always been pulled. It hasn't been voted on quite yet.
my perspective, not being in the all-important caucus here in the North Carolina House, is that there aren't enough votes yet to advance Senate Bill 559. Is that an accurate assessment? And what do you the question here, looking ahead to the next week and a half, 2 weeks,
right.
Just going to throw the wish out there and say that you all are going to go home for an extended break come early November. If that is to happen, and if something's going to take place with Senate Bill 559, this is the Duke Energy Rate Bill, short title.
Right.
What is your expectation? Is it going to come up for a vote? And will there be a majority of those present in the North Carolina House to send this?
This is one of those interesting bills where you have – it's not a partisan bill. You have Republicans who are for it. You have Republicans who are against it. You have Democrats who are for it. You have Democrats who are against it. I come down as to the policy on the bill. Whether it comes up or not, I don't know. I don't control that. Mm-hmm. Speaker and the Rules Chair control the calendar. One would think that if the votes were there, they'd bring it up, or maybe – I mean, I honestly do not know. In its current state as it is, I'm not in favor of the bill, and I think I've been very clear to everyone who's asked me why. It's not that I'm anti-Duke or anything else. I'm supportive of Duke and of all forms of energy. I think Duke's going to – I would particularly give shout-outs to Duke and – hurricane recovery in my neck of the woods down in Cumberland County, and mm-hmm. last two hurricanes and before that. I publicly said that on radio before as well, that they have done an awesome job in restoring power and the things that they do. So if the bill comes up, we'll see if the votes are there. And I mean, I don't know. I can't predict the future.
These energy issues are dicey, I think, for a number of reasons. But Duke's is
well, they're complicated. Sure. You know, when I first arrived in Raleigh, I was not a renewable energy fan. Mm-hmm. I was just the opposite. I thought they were only propped up by tax subsidies, and it was through education and really doing a deep six-month dive into energy policy, because that's not my background, to figure out that solar primarily can pay for itself. And I know there's still arguments when the sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow, and you know, all that kind of jazz. Which to some extent is true. Let's go back to 2014. I was told mm-hmm. at the time that battery technology was coming along, but it would probably be implemented about 2030. This is 2019. There are solar fields being built right now where industrial size storage is being installed because the cost has dropped so rapidly it makes sense. So
11 years of that.
Yeah, 11 years ahead of time.
Forecasted schedule that you had.
Okay. So technology is racing forward so quickly. The cost of things has dropped. That's why, as a conservative, I'm a fan, particularly of solar. It's got nothing to do with any type of issues that other groups or other individuals might have. It's about the cost, and it's a low-cost source of energy.
You were first elected in 2012. You're a four-term lawmaker here in the North Carolina
right.
House. You are retired military. You've been a small business owner. You didn't come when you came here, you were a relatively fresh legislator, so to speak. But as you just said, you took this deep dive on energy issues. But why? Tell me, I mean, who was it that led you there, or what was it that made you think?
Well, what led me there originally was because of Fort Bragg.
Mm-hmm.
My last tour in the Army was at Fort Bragg. I was on the Corps staff, the G3 operations staff, and I'd had some experiences over there, actually sending aircraft, staging them to hurricane relief in the Virgin Islands. I forget what hurricane it was. And at 3 in the morning, the Brigadier General and I had interesting conversations staging aircraft out and looking at them. What if the power went out here? And we had one of those conversations. So then I get a fast forward more than a few years. In 2003-04, somewhere around that, President Bush put a requirement on military bases to generate at least 25% of their energy on post by renewable resources by the year 2025. And let's go back a little bit in time now from where we are today to when I was first elected. Mm-hmm. President Obama was in charge. Okay? He was president. He was talking about downbuilding the armed forces. Downbuilding to Fort Bragg, you have the 82nd Airborne at the time, three airborne brigades, a lot of support units, things like that. A brigade generally has between 8 and 10,000 people and mm-hmm. support staff associated with. If we were to lose a brigade at Fort Bragg, that would have a huge adverse impact on the greater Fayetteville area, not only Fayetteville, but the surrounding counties, because the military is such a generator of jobs. The payroll comes in, people spend money, all that type of thing. So there was a lot of talk at the federal level of downbuilding the Army. One of the targets, because I've been through, when I was on active duty, one of the targets is always the airborne forces. A lot of people say it's outmoded, you don't need them anymore. I think that has been proved wrong in the last war we've been in. But at the time, that's always one of the things. So I was looking to protect Fort Bragg. When you looked at the political situation at the time, we had just elected Senator Tillis. Mm-hmm. Legislature had gone Republican. We had a Republican governor. You have a Democrat administration in D.C. Having seen how these build down in force structure goes, you have the force structure part, and then you have the political overlay. And with the Democrat administration, you would expect them to be skewed more towards Democratic states than newly red Republican states. So my interest was in trying to figure out, look at the scoreboard, potential scoreboard that Fort Bragg would undergo once you get away from do we need airborne or not. And to me, and to other folks I talked to across the country, it was a glaring deficiency for Fort Bragg to not even be going down the road towards renewable energy. So I took it upon myself to study more on that. And I had lobbyists telling me things and, I, you know, giving me information. And I read and read and kind of self-educated myself with the help of a lot of good folks around the building mm-hmm. here. That's what got me down the road.
Sure.
Because I had absolutely no background in energy at all.
More principled or pragmatic from your perspective on what led
yes.
you to this point here? Fair enough.
Yes. And on 559, we can talk about that bill specifically if you want. My votes, first thing I go to is policy. Is it good public policy or not? Some things are good public policy. I don't care if it's a Republican bill, a Democrat bill, whoever. It's either good policy or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in the committee process, I do my best to try and make it better to the point where I can vote for it if it's not good. And if it's good policy, well, then I vote for it.
So I'm going to lay this out for you. I want you to expound on it or tell me why perhaps I'm looking at this incorrectly. My perception is that there are not very many Republican lawmakers who are outspoken on this issue, who on occasion will step out in front of the proverbial Duke train and challenge Duke. And for whatever it's worth, my perspective is that there aren't a lot of Republican lawmakers who are particularly interested in this bigger issue of renewable, cleaner solar energy.
Right.
It also seems to me at the same time that they're, based on the way the laws are now and how this is governed in the state, that there is a free market argument to be made. And I've heard that from a number of conservatives
right.
who I've talked to, some lawmakers, but also staff and lobbyists. Tie that together for me, if you would. Is when we think about the free
yeah.
market principles that are not really in play when it comes to renewables in this state, is that something that you're...
Well, I am... Yes. I'm deeply
if
into
I'm being
that.
Unfair,
and
I want
my overall thesis here is that, A, you are correct that not a lot of folks, be they Republican, Democrat, whatever, dive as deep into energy because it gets real complicated really quickly. I have an engineering background, being a West Point graduate. I got a master's degree in operations research, a field of engineering from UT Austin, or UT Texas at Austin. So I'm kind of a numbers geeky kind of guy, so I was able to go into that. You have other people here who are education experts. That's not me. So I've come to the conclusion that technology is racing forward so fast, not just in energy, but in everything, but particularly in energy, that we have a regulatory model that worked great in the last century, but it needs some changing in this century if we really want to stay on the forefront of providing the cheapest electricity in the Southeast. Because if you don't have cheap electricity, what do you have? I mean, energy powers America. And Duke, to their credit, they have done a great job. It's because of their vertically integrated structure that we do have very inexpensive energy, and for that I thank them. However, I'm looking to the future. I gave you the example of storage, battery storage, that was supposed to be 2030, 2019, actually starting 2018, 12 years ahead of the projections of the smartest people that there were. Well, where are we going with all this? So you've got two alternative, not really competing structures. They can be, however. You've got the structured monopoly, which we have now, or you have alternatively more freer market things where you have regional transmission organizations, or you go to something like Texas has, where it's more of a free market. I'm not saying I'm in favor of one or the other, but what I am in favor of is trying to determine what best suits North Carolina needs. And I think we need a study before we go picking any one or two tools in the tool bag, as the argument goes, to really get into this. Now, Governor Cooper and his clean energy plan, it's 147 pages. I've read it. He actually went through a stakeholder process there, and I'm not endorsing all elements of the plan. Neither am I dismissing them, that there was a lot of good work done with a lot of stakeholders, and there's a lot of guideposts maybe and possible directions that we can go. And I think the legislature needs to pick up on some of those things and study them a little bit deeper so we make a well-informed decision on where the best policy for North Carolina energy policy is.
Do you have solar panels on your house or on any of your
property? I do not. Okay. I have had my house evaluated, but I have about a 100-year-old tree in front of my house that throws great shade. And I could have solar panels, cut the tree down, but I'd be divorced, so I'm not going to do that.
You don't want to cut down a 100-year-old tree.
I know. It really helps cool my house down.
Right. Full disclosure, I do not have solar panels on my house either. But based on current North Carolina law, you can have solar panels, and if you have excess energy, it goes back to the grid, goes back to Duke, and you get credited for that.
Right. It's called net metering is what
that's
called.
Net metering, right. You cannot – in some states, as I understand it, if you have excess energy, you can sell it to an energy
third
company.
Party.
A third party.
Right.
So we don't have third-party sales in this state. Is that something – I mean, that's a minor thing, but is that an example, and are there other examples of the way – the laws exist now that perhaps in some ways they dampen economic growth or they dampen opportunity.
There is an argument that goes down that road and
would you
agrees
that
with that
argument?
Point of view.
Would you make that argument?
Personally, I'm in favor of third-party sales, but if we're going to have third-party sales before we would do that, and I actually have had bills in the past which have proposed that several years ago, but now I'm of the opinion we need a stakeholder process. That's again, it's one part of the overall picture. Would that work in North Carolina? Sure, it'd work. But you have to have the right regulatory structure to make sure that all the pieces fit together. Make sense?
I think so.
Okay.
John Zocca here on the WDONC Politics Podcast on Twitter at John Zocca. That's S-Z-O-K-A. House District 45 is the district which he serves. It includes much of Fort Bragg as well as a swath of rural Cumberland County. You have a little bit of Fayetteville, right?
Well,
it's changing.
It's changing as we sit here. Right. Right now what I have is, if you're familiar with Cumberland County, I have the whole county east of the river, which is mainly rural. Then I have part of the town of Hope Mills and a small part of the county where I live. That, if the redistricting holds, I will lose most of the rural area and gain some more suburbs of the city of Fayetteville.
So let's chat 2020, if only briefly.
Okay.
You're seeking another term. You're going to run for re-election in this district.
Mm-hmm.
You're not considering anything else, are you?
No,
just get it off the table.
I'm not going to move. I love my house. I like where I am. I'm not moving, but I do plan on filing for re-election. Yes,
you alluded to the new maps. How much more challenging do you anticipate the 2020 race for you?
I guess two things about that. First, very sad that I'm losing all the rural areas. And it's not because of the population who lives there, votes for anything. It's sad because I know all the mayors. I know all the town councilmen. I've knocked on so many doors there that I can go to a door and tell you that this child now is in 11th grade and that child's – I mean, I've got into the communities. There's a lot of small towns there. I've really connected with them, and I think I've been able to help my small towns a lot. So I'm very sad to be losing that. The new district, I think I'll probably do fine. I'm not sure there's anybody who works harder than I do out in connecting, knocking on doors and talking to folks and making my views known and also finding out what the views of my constituents are so I can better represent them. It's going to be a more urban area, so not as many rural issues. But nobody ever likes change, but I'll deal with it.
Excuse the naive nature of this next question. Does your district changing perhaps lend itself to you and other members of the Cumberland County delegation working better with each other or more frequently with each other come 2021 in terms of, hey, you know, this hamlet over here, this part of the county, they've been working on this sewer system, or they need this funding for this particular magnet school. Does it maybe lend itself to some more collaboration?
I don't know.
Or am I
maybe
really
I'm
stretching
a
it?
Little bit of an oddball Republican in more ways than one, because out of our delegation of six, we have two Democrat senators representing Cumberland County and mm-hmm. four House members, three Democrats and me. I already work with the Democrats.
Okay.
I mean, I work for the betterment of my community. So I don't know that it will. I mean, there are several projects definitely that I'll need to pass off, but I'll still keep involved with the building of the dam at Rhodes Pond and others, which doesn't mean anybody unless you're in Cumberland County. But
I believe you just called yourself an oddball Republican. So
I probably
did. Avoiding getting myself in trouble, I'm going to say you just called yourself an oddball Republican, which helps me lead into this next question, which is navigating this presidency and everything that it includes. I think it has challenges for every elected official in some way, shape, or form. What is your approach to dealing with this presidency and at times probably threading a very thin needle?
I'm a supporter of President Trump. There's no doubt about that. He has some very peculiar ways of dealing with other people in his life. Frankly, I think I wish if there was one thing I'd ask him a little bit is to tweet a little less hostile things sometimes. But on the other hand, he can't get his message out except by tweeting, because it gets filtered through the news media to some extent sometimes.
Your message gets filtered through the news media.
Filtered a lot.
But I don't see you calling people names on Twitter.
I don't. I try and stay positive on social media, because I look at social media more as a method of communications to let people know what's going on. And I do follow other people on Twitter, and not only elected officials, but other folks, just to kind of get a temperature for what's going on in my district and my county. I was sitting with some Democrats at lunch here, and we were talking about, and they brought it up, I didn't, about how many times that these votes are not always unanimous, but near unanimous.
113-4.
It's most of the things that we vote on are near unanimous. It's the couple of things that we don't that always gets blown up and dwelt on. I wish that story would get out to the public. I'm not sure that's really the case in Congress, because they have cameras behind every member there every day. But here in Raleigh, it's not as contentious as some people would have you believe.
Is there a specific example that comes to mind as you think about that? And I'll put one on the table. I just thought of the Raise the Age mini budget that just moved through. I mean, that's I think a good example. And I do think some members of the media have done tried to illustrate the fact that that has had wide bipartisan support for a long time.
I think that's a good example.
Okay.
The prison guard pay raises, mm-hmm. that's another example.
Right.
You know, state employee raises. I mean, those all passed by wide margins. Where the budget got messed up was there were one or two flashpoints for the governor in there that he didn't like. And if you look at the state budget that was passed and the House recently overrode, if you take out the Medicaid expansion that he wants and you take out the really small differences in teacher pay, they're not huge differences between what was in the budget and what the governor requested. If you take those two out.
2-3%, if memory serves.
Yeah. Of course, I'm thinking back to the original House budget, too. Our House budget was a little bit more. But anyway, if you take those out, probably 90% of what's in there, everybody agrees on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of sad to me that the governor vetoed the budget when we agree on 90% of it, and we've offered to sit down and have a discussion about the parts that he doesn't want, that he doesn't like. But
that's the fork in the road. That's politics versus policy.
Yeah, that is.
Right? I mean,
that is policy. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You were a graduate of West Point,
mm-hmm.
20 years in the military, earned the rank of lieutenant colonel. What's the biggest fundamental difference between, because you've spent 7 years now here in the legislature, but 20 years in the military versus 7 years in the legislature, what is the clearest fork in the road between those two?
Well, in the military, there is no legislative time. If something's supposed to start at 0900, it starts at 0900, which whenever I chair finance, as long as I have a quorum, I always gavel in at the appointed hour. So it's the first time I did that. We got through three bills in 10 minutes. People were still kind of wandering, and they weren't contentious bills. And I did it purposefully to make a point that the committee starts on time. Be here on time, and you'll hear what's going on. If you're not here on time, well, not my problem.
You still still a big chain of command guy?
I am a chain of command guy, but politics is different because each one of the 120 members, my constituents sent me here. So you might have a position, but I still have to represent my folks. And in all honesty, that was a good question because that was something I had issues with when I first got here trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got it figured out pretty good now, though.
Is it fair to say that there – I mean, in the military, there's a chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
In politics, there are multiple chains of command, depending on the day, depending on whether or not you're in a finance committee or dealing with a negotiation with the Senate or dealing with your constituents.
In the military, it's a chain of command. In the politics, it might be chain of accountability because you're accountable to first the people who put you here, which is the voters in your district. You're accountable to your wider area where you live. Like, I don't live in the city of Fayetteville, but I'm accountable to the city of Fayetteville and the rest of Cumberland County. And then you're accountable to committee chairs. You're accountable to your political structure. It's not really command where it's like you give an order and people do things.
Fair enough. Lieutenant Colonel, as I mentioned, your wife outranks you. She is
she does.
As I understand, she's a colonel.
She is.
What's that dynamic like?
People bring that up, and I say I laughed when we were in the military every day on payday. It really bothered me. But and in all honesty, if married couples are being honest, what wife doesn't outrank their husband, at least some of the time? So
my wife outranked me in multiple ways. Yeah. One more on the military. This is a fun throwaway. But you get more satisfaction out of watching Army beat Navy or Air Force in football?
Oh, Navy. Oh, absolutely. Air Force, we're like, you know, you operate together. But Navy – that is my one not-miss football game every year, Army-Navy game.
All right. Lightning round before we get you out of here.
Okay.
What is one thing about your district that most people outside of your district don't know about your district?
Probably up here, most people don't know that the majority of my district right now is rural and semi-rural. I think a lot of folks, I say I'm from Fayetteville, they think I'm from the city of Fayetteville, and I have a few neighborhoods, but mainly it's rural and semi-rural, small-town America.
Scale 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. What is your interest in one day being Speaker of the North Carolina House?
That's a scale of 1 to 10 is I don't know.
That's not a number between 1 and 10.
That is not a number between 1 and 10.
Is that something you think about? Is that something that
– No, not really. That's – you know, I'm just pleased. This is the only elected position I've ever been. I didn't start out a county commissioner or anything else. I'm just pleased to be here to represent the 80,000 people that I do represent. And if other opportunities for leadership come my way and I'm selected by folks for it, that's great. And if they don't, I'm happy with that as well.
That sounds like a five.
That's your number, not mine.
We'll end on a number. You turned 65 on Monday.
Oh, thanks for that.
How did you celebrate?
Went to a ribbon cutting of a great
fun?
New fire and rescue center.
I'm sure that was
and
fun. Did you do anything
to the
for yourself?
Cumberland County Republican Executive Committee. Then I went home and had a very nice intimate dinner with my wife and watched some TV and then went to bed and woke up and came here.
Sounds fantastic.
The other thing I did was started the day off with a workout. I went to the gym, worked out for an hour, so I felt good about that.
I'll throw you on the spot here. This is not in front of me. And you mentioned as you came, I asked you if you were a runner, and I will concede while throwing, I guess, some shade at a lot of the folks around here, myself included. I could lose a few pounds. There are plenty of lawmakers that are overweight. You're not overweight. You look like you're a former runner or current runner. Have you ever run marathons?
Not a marathon. I've run half marathon, and I participated on a number of team runs, like when I was stationed in Hawaii around the island marathon. It's like 145 miles. You end up running the equivalent of a marathon.
Sure, but in two or three segments. Or
my best running days are behind me.
Knees, hips, ankles, everything?
I've had an ankle injury. I rehabbed that. The knees just I run, but most of my running now is on an elliptical machine or on a treadmill.
When are you going to be running out of the legislature to go home for an extended break?
Oh, you mean this session?
Yeah, I mean this session. When does that take place? because I've
my crystal ball is in the shop getting fixed.
Yeah, with your knees.
Yeah, with my knees. Hopefully sooner rather than later. I hope that we see things coming to an end here on October 31st, if not before. I've got a life back home, and I've got responsibilities back home, my civilian job, and I need to be paying some more attention to them.
I think I have a life outside of here. Maybe I'll find out
in
a couple weeks. I'm not anymore. Representative John Zocca, four-term member of the North Carolina House, Republican from Cumberland County. Thank you, sir, for the conversation.
And thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
As always, you can download the program iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Don't forget about our Friday podcast drop with Becky Gray of the Conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the Progressive NC Policy Watch as they take a swing at reviewing some of the North Carolina political news. For Representative John Zocca, I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again soon.